Thank you, worship team. Well, good morning, Oasis family. Just checking, still morning?
Morning.
So, for anyone who doesn't know, my name is Asher. I'm one of the leaders here at Oasis, and I oversee a lot of the children's and family's work. And in true fashion, I've got good news and bad news. So the good news is that we've got some people on holiday, obviously some people not on holiday. And so I've got a short message for you today. There's only two points, two main takeaway points. That's the good news. Bad news is I was meant to start about 20 minutes ago. So it's going to be okay, though. Pastor says, keep going. We're going to be absolutely fine. I am aiming to finish this morning. Okay. Fantastic. So I want to start off by taking you back to one of my memories that I have as a child. So when I was younger, my parents, not my parents, but my grandparents, they would often say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Can you say that for me? It's not what you know, it's who you know. Good, good, good. You're going to say that a few times. And usually, my grandparents, they would say this whenever my granddad got someone a job at the factory, whether it was a member of the family or a family friend. He would say, it's not what you know, it's who you know, which sounds great if you wanted a job in the factory. But what if you didn't want a job in the factory? Was knowing someone really the most important thing? Knowing someone in that industry more important than your skills or your experience or your qualifications? And I remember as a child, I really couldn't come to terms with that expression. I mean, as a child, you don't really want to know a lot of people, do you? And when I think back, I think actually knowing my brothers was probably enough effort most days. I didn't need to know anybody else. However, as I've grown up and experienced a little bit more of life, I'm sure there's still some to come, I've come to learn the potential value of this expression, and I'd like to give you a recent example. So I recently experienced a problem with my car. Oh no. And it was nothing particularly concerning, it was just my clutch was having a bit of a wobble on me. And it happened on a Monday as I was coming home from work. And as it happened, I'd booked my car in for a full service on the Thursday of the same week. So Nancy and I, my wife Nancy and I, we've got a fantastic rapport with a mechanic. We've used him over 10 years, top notch, highly recommend. So when my clutch decided to have this wobble on me, have a bit of a meltdown, I thought to myself, no bother. I know a guy. Car's booked in for Thursday. All I had to do was juggle staying local or borrowing someone else's car for a couple of days. Car's in Thursday. He'll sort me out. And actually, I didn't even really need to know what the problem was. Something with the clutch. I don't know. You're the guy. You deal with it. Because it's not what you know. It's who you know. Fantastic. So I dropped the car off on the Thursday. I wasn't bothered. It's fine. And I remember when I dropped it off, I couldn't actually see my guy. I sort of looked around for him. But do you know what? It's not the end of the world. Him, his team, they're all sound. I thought it doesn't matter. And to be honest, he doesn't do any of the work anyway. He's just the gaffer. He sort of, you know, he haggle with him over price, but ultimately he asked someone else to do the work. So I thought, that's fine. That's not a problem. So I dropped the car off and I explained the issue. And I walked out the door without a care in the world. I'm not going to lie to you. I walked out knowing full well, I know a guy. He's going to get that sorted for me. It wasn't fine. So I picked my car up after the service and I asked how they'd gotten on with the clutch problem. And I was met with a rather puzzled response. What clutch problem? And I thought, thank you. I thought, sorry, have I walked into the wrong garage? What's happened here? I was confused, like genuinely confused. I thought I was in the wrong place. And I started to scan the mechanics and scan their faces, and I looked around, and it slowly began to dawn on me. I didn't recognise any of them. Not one. I was like, where is my guy? What has happened here? And I later learnt that my guy had actually retired. And when he retired, all of his guys moved on. None of them were left. And what had been so special between us for over 10 years was no more. It was the end. That was it. It was gone. Now, you're probably wondering, I can see a couple of puzzled faces, you're probably wondering why I've told you this. Well, it's not because I'm in the market for a new mechanic. Although I absolutely am. So, please see me at the end if you've got one worth knowing. No, it's because I want us to think about the guys, it's not gender specific, I want us to think about the guys that we have in our lives. Who is it that we know? And you can probably relate to the relationship that I had, gosh, talking about it past tense, had with my mechanic. You can probably relate to that. You will have guys in your life, the dog sitter guy, the early hours airport drop-off pickup guy, the house move guy, the do you fancy a curry guy. You might even go a step further and you might have the would you pray for me guy, the would you help me witness to my neighbour guy, or do you know what, I really need some advice guy. I'm sure you can relate. And if you're anything like me, you really lean into the expression, we're going to say it again, it's not what you know. If you're anything like me, you lean into that. And what you do is you collect contacts who are mini professionals in their different areas that you can call on as and when you need them. And you know what? You are probably a guy to other people as well, because you'll have some specialities that other people don't have and they will call on you. No one's nodding along, but no one's shaking their head in disagreement, so I'm sure we're all on the same page. So, 2 points that I want us to take away today. This is the first point. The first point is that if you don't already know him, there is a guy that I believe you should know. And that's Jesus. And my first point is that you should know Jesus for yourself. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to do a bit of reading. So this is Matthew 16, verses 13 to 20. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say I am?" Simon Peter replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." Then he strictly charged the disciples to tell no one that he was the Christ. The single most important guy that you can know in your life is Jesus. And I'd go as far as saying, if you can only know one person, if your capacity is to only know one person, make it Jesus. Not someone who knows Jesus, Jesus himself. Know him personally. Know him for yourself. Why? Why do I think that? Well, because Jesus alone is the way to God the Father. Jesus is the guy. Notice the emphasis change? 1 John chapter 5, verse 12. Whoever has the Son has life. Whoever does not have the Son of God does not have life. There is literally nothing more valuable in our lives than knowing Jesus personally. I'll say that again. There is nothing more valuable in our lives, in this world, than knowing Jesus personally. And we need to understand that this is not something that we can come to on our own, but rather it requires revelation from God. So if we go back to our reading in Matthew 16, verse 17, it says, Jesus says, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." You see, knowing Jesus is knowing real life. Knowing Jesus is to be reconciled to God, to have your sins forgiven and washed away and never again remembered against you, to be adopted into his family, to be his very own child and have access in his kingdom, his life and his future, to have everything that is lacking added to your life. It's not what you know. Grandparents might have been onto something there. Jesus adds in verse 18, he says, "And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." Now, this is really interesting, because if we rewind back to verse 16, we see that Peter is referred to as Simon Peter. And this is actually for our benefit. This is so that we can be clear. Matthew is making it very clear who we are talking about. Because when this was written, everybody would have known this chap as Peter. But when the event took place, he was known as Simon. And this is the really interesting bit, because this is where the change starts to take place. And we see that Simon gets a new identity. Knowing for ourselves who Jesus really is gives us a new identity too. And from this point, Simon begins to disappear and Peter takes his place. It's the same bloke, he's just being transformed. When we really know who Jesus is for ourselves, a change starts to take place and we begin to live a new life based on who Jesus is to us. Essentially, no Jesus, no change. And that life is different and better than the old life. And we live it to the full by letting go of our old identity. We have to live in the identity that we gain through Jesus alone. And there's a message for us in this change that takes place for Simon Peter. The name Peter means a rock. And as you read about Simon Peter in the Gospels, he is anything but a rock. Goodness me, what a mess. But what we need to remember is that in the Gospels, he was on his way to becoming Peter, as in the Peter that we read about in Acts. Completely different bloke. Well, it's not actually same bloke. He's just been transformed. I think that we would do well to remember that we too are on our way to becoming all that we can be in Christ. Wherever we are along the way, God is patient and full of loving kindness and tender mercies, which means we should probably learn to be really patient with ourselves and one another. I'm not there yet. You're not there yet. The person next to you, they're not there yet. But be encouraged. Keep going and keep growing. Keep getting to know Jesus more and more and more and more and more and more and more. No matter how well you know Jesus, make it a priority to know him even more. Because it is not what you know.
It's who you know.
Fantastic, look at that. From that revelation of who Jesus is, Peter becomes more and more reliable. Can you say reliable? He becomes more and more dependable. Say dependable. And he becomes more and more stable. Look at that. Can you remember all three? Why did you all work backwards? Reliable, dependable, stable. Who wants to be those things? In Christ, we do not have to be tossed about by life's storms, but rather we can always have peace and stability in Jesus. Why is that? Well, it's because he is the guy. Doesn't really matter what the problem is, Jesus is the guy. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And Simon, by receiving the revelation of who Jesus is, was changed into Peter. He received the revelation of who Jesus was because he followed Jesus. He knew him. He made Jesus his guy. And we are also changed for the better when we get to know Jesus for ourselves as he's revealed to us by God. And that change is never supposed to reach an end in this life. It is designed to keep going and keep going and keep increasing in our lives, from faith to faith, strength to strength, and glory to glory, as we come to know Jesus more and more. Because it's not what you know. My wife read the notes and she said, it's too much, Asha, it's too much. We're only halfway. It's still this morning, though. So my first point is that it is important for us to know Jesus ourselves personally. And the second point is that I believe that we should know Jesus for others. Let me unpack. In verse 19 from our reading, if we've got that, please, it says, this is Jesus speaking, he says, I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Now, I don't know about you, but keys represent, to me, authority and access. So, for example, if you have the keys to this building, then you can come and go as you please. Would you agree with that? I wouldn't know. They don't give me keys. Now, it's not true, Pastor. Now, notice here that Jesus says, he does not say key as in single, but rather he says keys as in plural, as in all of the keys. So, if you only have a key to the front door of this building, then you can come in, but you will only have access to the foyer. Not very exciting, is it? There are areas, once you get inside, that are still locked, okay? But if you had a couple of keys, then you might be able to come into the foyer and maybe open another door. But again, you wouldn't have full access to the building. However, if you had the keys, then the implication is that you would have access to the whole building. There is not one good thing that God has that he has not made available to us through Jesus. In Romans 8, 31 and 32, we read, what then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? And Paul goes on to tell us in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 21, he says, so let no one boast in men, for all things are yours. How many of the things? All. All the things, all of them. And we have access to all the things through getting to know Jesus for ourselves. But there's something pretty cool, actually, that's important about having the keys. Jesus says about things being bound or loosed. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. We don't really use that in our... No, we don't. Not only can you open the door and come in, but you can open the building up and invite others in. You could also hold the door open and welcome people in. You could, in fairness, come in and close the door behind you and keep certain things out, but that is not something that we're going to talk about this morning. So let me expand on this. Sometimes we have a need for a guy, but we haven't got one. So then what do? Well, I'll tell you what I do. I will talk to my group of guys and I will ask them if they know someone. And then it becomes, I know a guy who knows a guy. Yeah? Anyone? Can you relate to that? We're nodding. That's good. I'm glad I'm not by myself there. For example, I'm in the market for a new mechanic. And there are a few of you who I've already spoken to see if you know a good mechanic. We all do this, don't we? We ask those around us to see if they can recommend a particular guy for a particular need. And then hopefully the intention is that that guy also becomes your guy and, you know, fantastic. And again, you may also relate to being on the receiving end of that. You might have, one of your guys might come to you and put you in contact with someone else because they need your help. Well, it is the same with salvation. The more you know Jesus, the more you'll be transformed. And the more you're transformed, the more that people will want to know who you know. Because they can recognize that difference in you. You effectively have the opportunity to signpost people back to Jesus. You have the keys to open the door. It's the whole, he did it for me, he can do it for you. Because it's not what you know. This is especially so for parents. And Moses teaches this quite beautifully, I think, in Deuteronomy chapter 6. So I'm just going to read a few verses from verse 5. He says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." And essentially, the instruction is this. Moses says, first of all, know God better. Know what you're talking about. And then secondly, he says, once you've done that, make God known to your children. He's instructing parents to introduce their children to God. Now, some parents think that this is the role of Sunday school, but it's not. And what we do in Sunday school is we partner with parents on that journey to help parents introduce their children to Jesus, because the biblical expectation is quite clear. But this is the same for all of us. In Mark 16, verse 15, "And he said to them, 'Go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation.'" Jesus essentially says, now that you know me, introduce me to your friends, to your family, and to your community, which might sound really daunting at first, but actually it's not that complicated. If you really rate your mechanic, why wouldn't you give me their number? Like, you would, wouldn't you? If you trusted your mechanic, you would have no problem sharing with your friends and with your family. So why would introducing people to Jesus be any different? Okay, we're coming in to conclude now. It's just gone 12 o'clock. Apologies. I tried. But we're on the home stretch, so stay with me. Point number one, make knowing Jesus personally a priority. Believe that Jesus plus nothing else is enough. Make him the guy in your life. Because this might be the last time we do this, so give it a bit. It's not what you know, it's who you know. Nancy's in Sunday school, she'll not like this when she watches this back, I'm telling you. In Philippians chapter 3, verses 7 and 8. But whatever gain I had, I counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish, in order that I may gain Christ. You see, knowing Jesus isn't about getting something. Knowing Jesus is about becoming someone. And in that transformation, it gives us opportunities, moving into our second point, to make Jesus better known. Whether that's your partner, whether it's your children, whether it's your friends, or whether it is your neighbours. You can be the guy who introduces people to the guy. And I want to end with an illustration for you to take away. Has everybody been on an aeroplane? Some of you have. Great. Is everyone familiar with the oxygen masks that pop out when you're on an aeroplane? Fantastic. So what they do is they drop from a hidden compartment, don't they, in the event of any trouble during the flight. And what you have to do is you have to, once it drops down, you have to give it a bit of a tug to start the oxygen flowing. And then you pop it on your face, on your mouth and your nose, and you tighten the elastic. And the instructions are very, very clear. They will tell you, you put on your own mask first before helping others. And there's a pretty sound rationale behind this. Because once your mask is on, you're in a position to help as many people as you like without holding your breath and risk passing out. Everyone happy with that sort of rationale? Fantastic. Because I feel this illustration fits this message really well. If this world that we're living in was a flight, and we were all on that flight together, it's probably fair to say that the turbulence started some while ago. And the masks, they've dropped down. They're ready for us. And the first thing that we have to do is we have to take that mask. We have to make a decision to take that mask and give it a tug. And that mask is freely given. It's there for the taking. The tug starts the flow of oxygen, and that is the good news of Jesus Christ. We have to make that decision. We have to take that action before that oxygen flows. Secondly, with the oxygen flowing, we have to put the mask on. And with the mask on, we're breathing. It doesn't matter about the atmosphere outside of that mask because we're breathing. And if we're breathing, we are living. And the part of the flight that we're wearing the mask, that's the part of life where we're getting to know Jesus more and more. For as long as that mask is on, we are alive. We are being transformed. Which makes you wonder, why on earth would you take the mask off? And then thirdly, with our masks on, we are able to help those around us put on their masks. We can help them put the mask in the right position. We can tighten the elastic for them behind the ears. And this is where we introduce people to Jesus. But if we have not tugged on that mask, that is, having accepted Jesus into our lives, putting on that mask ain't going to make much difference. oxygen's not flowing, no point putting the mask on. Nor can we help others put on their masks if we're not wearing our own. My encouragement is this. Firstly, know Jesus better. Personally, you and Jesus know him better. And secondly, make Jesus better known. And one last time, for the benefit of my wife who's joined us. Because it's not what you know, it's who you know. Bless you all. Thank you very much.